The changes to Medicare will affect the rebates paid for some orthopaedic surgery, general surgery and heart surgery in the private system. If you're booked in for these kinds of surgery after 30 June, how much clarity has your doctor given you about any changes to your out-of-pocket costs? Leanne Wells is the CEO of the Consumer Health Forum. Leanne, great to have you with us. Thanks.
Thanks, Hilary.
And Dr. Stephen Duckett is with us too. He's an economist at the Grattan Institute. He's Health and Aged Care Program Director there. And he's held some top policy leadership positions in healthcare over the years, including Secretary of the Federal Department of Health. Stephen, thanks for taking the time for us today.
Good morning, Hilary.
Stephen, can I start with you? Why are these changes happening now? Give us the backstory in a nutshell.
So, Hilary, we go back... Well, Medicare was developed in the 60s, implemented in second time in 84, and medicine has evolved. Things have changed a lot. And so it is logical that the item numbers that we use to that Medicare uses to pay doctors should be adjusted and updated. And Australia isn't really very good at that. We don't do it in a regular routine way. And so we ended up with this schedule, which has got lots of old items on it, not as clear as it could be, not using contemporary language, allowing rorts to take place with multiple billings. And so Susan Lee, when she was health minister back in 2015, established a really comprehensive review to look at the whole of the Medicare schedule, and say, what should we be doing in this millennium rather than the previous one? And so they established a whole lot of working groups. For example, there was an orthopaedic working group, and the orthopaedic working group produced a 340-page report saying what should happen to the orthopaedic items, and that landed in 2019. Then we didn't hear anything from them, and eventually someone had to say, well, we're going to adopt all of these recommendations, and the way we're going to adopt the recommendations in that 340-page report is make these precise changes to the Medicare schedule. So we're going to actually change the wording of what are called the descriptors, the wording of the items. And that was released late May, last month. And so you'd have this hiatus between 2019 when the big report came out and then this in late May they said this is precisely what we're going to change, and by and large following what the recommendations were, incidentally, and we're going to do this on 1st of July. So there was really only a five-week notice of the actual details of what actually is going to happen, and that's what's caused the outcry.
That sounds like, as you say, there were some hints in the recommendations. If you assumed that they were going to follow through with the recommendations, that might not have been such a surprise. How important is it to have that specific information for the hospital system and the insurers?
Well, the important thing is that most doctors, only 25% of services provided in hospital are billed at the Medicare schedule. Most doctors charge a lot more than that. And so you rely on health insurance to make up the difference. And so about half of what you get back for doctor services in hospital, in private hospitals, comes from Medicare, and about 40% comes from the insurer. So you've got to get the insurers on side. And what that also means is the insurers have to negotiate with each doctor about, are they going to have a no-gap agreement, which means you have no out-of-pockets ever? Are you going to have a known gap agreement, which is more common? Or you're going to have no agreement at all. So the insurers have to know precisely what is going to be in the items, and the doctors need to know precisely what's in the item so they can sign or amend their no-gap or known-gap agreement, and that's what's causing the problems.
And the patients want to know too, and we'll get to the consumer perspective in a moment. But I quickly want to take this call from Christian in Queensland. Christian, you're deeply involved in the health system. Tell us your thoughts about these changes.
Thank you. Look, I'm a professor of cardiology and a clinical cardiologist in Queensland, and I don't charge a gap for my services for inpatient care. But this review of item numbers has been intended to provide high-value care. However, the community needs to understand that the cost of providing services simply isn't met by the reimbursement that Medicare provides, and that's why gaps exist. But there are some changes to these item numbers, and in cardiology, for example, ultrasound of the heart or CT scanning of the arteries to look at the heart non-invasively without having to go inside the body. Those items have now been heavily restricted. For example, you can't have a scan more than once in every 5 years, which isn't supported by the data or by patient outcomes, because we know that patients after 2 years can represent with new chest pain and have developed blockages, and now we're not able to provide these services. And that's going to adversely affect costs, and it's going to restrict access for patients, and it doesn't really make sense to me.
Stephen Duckett, do you have a thought on that?
So I haven't looked at those items in particular, but what we do know is that there was a cardiac services group that engaged with the general principle of how they worked was they had a specific group looking at each section of the schedule, which was populated by and large by experts in that area, so people from those subspecialties. They consulted with the specialty groups as well before they finalised their report. Now, I don't know the precise examples that you're using, but that Christian is using, but I do know there was extensive consultation as part of the development of these proposals.
And Christian, were you part of that consultation process?
Yes, I think I would, with greatest of respect, the issue is that the feedback provided by the stakeholders and, for example, the Cardiac Society was simply ignored by the Department of Health. And this 5-year issue was raised, and they just said no, and they've implemented it anyway. So there's no point in having stakeholder engagement with experts if you then ignore their advice. And our advice is based on patient, best care.
Christian, thanks so much for that perspective. Really glad you called in. Leanne Wells joins us from the Consumer Health Forum. Leanne, there was a consumer panel involved in this big review of Medicare, and they said that they had genuine influence on the outcome. They seem pretty positive about the experience. Doesn't that suggest that they felt these changes would overall benefit consumers in the end?
Yeah, look, just building on what Stephen had to say, all of those multiple clinical reference groups that looked very forensically item by item as part of this 5-year review involved consumers. And then there was an overarching patient panel that looked and provided a sort of patient or consumer commentary on all of the proposed changes that went forward to government in the task force report. I think it is fair to say from a consumer perspective, the fact that the schedule had been in place for so long without review, this is about modernising Medicare. And as Stephen said, medicine has evolved. So I think patients have very much welcomed, on the whole, the fact that, you know, as taxpayers and as patients, our public health insurance scheme, which is Medicare and the rebates that go along with that, are being reviewed. Because as patients and as taxpayers, we want to be assured that high-value care is being rebated and rebated at appropriate levels and that patients are getting the best possible care they can. So if that means items are removed, descriptors of procedures are adapted and made more contemporary in line with current evidence, and new procedures added, that's good public policy from our point of view. So on the whole, yes, but I think where things become a little bit more complex, and this is the implementation challenge we're facing now at the individual patient level. If you've been booked in for surgery, there's a lot of confusion and the need for some very clear information to come to patients who are looking at various procedures, either booked in or planned, so that, you know, the implications for them, and particularly the financial implications for them, are really clear. It's all about informed financial consent.
How much of that is there at the moment, Leanne, in the system?
Informed financial consent?
Yeah, how much information are people able to get about, you know, accurate upcoming costs?
Oh, look, I think it's really patchy and inconsistent practice. The AMA and organisations like the Cancer Council have put out some really quite good informed financial guidelines. But look, the health system is complicated enough for consumers to navigate without having to navigate and haggle over price as well. So, you know, we advocate at CHF for the idea of, you know, a single, you know, the notion of a single quotation, so that if you're going in for a hip replacement, for example, you're getting, it's disclosed to you up front, you know, the Medicare rebate, the insurer rebate, the gap that you're going to face if you are going to face it, the anaesthetist, you know, all of those cumulative costs, including your diagnostics and aftercare, really should be set out for you in a very simple and easy to understand way. That doesn't happen in practice very consistently.
We're speaking with Leanne Wells, CEO of the Consumer Health Forum, and Dr. Stephen Duckett, an economist and the Health and Aged Care Program Director at the Grattan Institute. Michael's on the line from Brisbane. Now, Michael, you've got an experience from the past. Tell us what happened for you.
Oh, yes. I was in a specialist's surgery, and the surgeon, I asked the surgeon, and he said, oh, yes, for my shoulder. He said, yes, you need surgery, possibly two operations. And I said, well, how much is this going to cost? And he said, oh, I don't have that information. You check with my receptionist. She has my schedule of fees.
And what did the receptionist say, Michael?
Well, the receptionist gave me that information, but then said, oh, but then you need to add the cost of the anaesthetist and the hospital. And I said, well, how much are they? And she said, oh, we don't have that information. You have to contact them yourself.
So that's half a day on the phone, isn't it, Michael?
It was. Yeah, but it would have been. In the end, I was so unimpressed with the response that I got from them that I decided not to go ahead. And my shoulder healed itself. There's the poor communication aspect.
Well, I'm very pleased to hear that it worked out all right for you in the end, Michael. Thanks for your call.
You're welcome.
So, Hilary, can I just make a comment on Michael's call?
Yes, indeed.
Even if he'd rung the anaesthetist and got that, he still wouldn't know the pathology and the radiology and the physicians and the intensive care unit doctors that he might have had bills from as well. So, as Leanne said, you want a single integrated bill that someone takes responsibility for and says, this is the bill you're going to get, this is how much out-of-pockets you're going to pay.
And who would that person be, Dr. Stephen Duckett, that took responsibility for that bill?
Well, my view is it should be the private hospital, but it could be the private insurance company or it could be the surgeon, the principal doctor. But someone needs to take responsibility, and the moment no one takes responsibility for the whole bill.
Well, does the government have some responsibility here, Stephen? I mean, they are in charge of the whole system.
So the real issue is that these unexpected bill shocks that you get when you go into a private hospital really, really annoy people. They've been paying insurance all their life. They might have said, I'm going to sign up for a $750 upfront deductible or excess, and they know they're going to pay their $750 because they got reduced insurance premium for that. And when they turn up, they discover it's not $750 at all. It might be $1,750 or $10,000. They get all of these extra bills that they were not expecting, and they get really, really, really annoyed. So, you know, I think part of the future of private health insurance, if they want to encourage people to be insured, they've actually got to make sure the product is a good one and it actually delivers what it says. And certainly, as you point out, Hilary, government has a responsibility to help in making sure that happens.
Mm. Heart surgery, orthopaedic surgery, general surgery in the private system. If you've got one of those booked in after the end of the financial year, so starting from 1 July, we'd love to hear what kind of communication you've had about your costs, because the changes to the Medicare system will kick in from that date, 1 July, and they'll affect about 900 procedures of various surgeries. So we'd love to hear if that's you and if your doctor and your insurer have been able to be clear with you about what you can expect in those bills that Stephen pointed out. Just keep coming. This is Life Matters. Dr. Stephen Duckett's with us from the Grattan Institute and Leanne Wells, the CEO of the Consumer Health Forum. Stephen, just quickly, the AMA said that, you know, there was a debacle in 2018 when some similar changes were made, though vastly fewer, I think only about 70-odd. Are they right? Was that tranche of changes an indication of how disruptive this one might be?
I can't remember which round there that was, but yes, I do remember that one of those rounds, there was just a whole lot of confusion about what was actually going to happen. Now, in this round, they must have learned from that, because there's now an 85-page document in the orthopaedic case which says these are the precise changes we're actually going to make. So they really are clear up front about what is happening. But the problem is it's only 6 weeks, 5 weeks notice.
And Leanne Wells, what's the consumer perspective from previous changes and how they've been rolled out?
Oh, look, I'm not really familiar with the particular scenario that the AMA were talking about there, Hilary, but I think the current instance we've got, it's about implementation. And we just need, I mean, the changes on the whole are good. I mean, there's still some uncertainty around out-of-pocket cost impacts for some particular patients in particular circumstances. But, just some stepwise, pragmatic implementation so that all the players that Stephen described earlier, patients, insurers, doctors, have the time to just bed this down and communicate it. And I think that with all due respect to the department, putting some detailed information buried on their website is not the way to convey these sorts of changes to consumers. We need to get much better as a community about any change to the health system, about getting really good consumer explainers out there in ways that people can understand. There's huge variation in health literacy and big challenges that many people face navigating the healthcare system, let alone in the financial side of it. So, our plea is just, can we just, get implementation stepwise, pragmatic, with the right time allowed for it.
Better communication across the board, better clarity. And John's on the line from Sydney. John, you had twins. Congratulations. But how did it play out financially?
Yeah, look, my wife went into hospital. She had top cover with Teachers Health. And we thought, most of the costs will be covered. Unfortunately, we were out of pocket quite a few thousands of dollars. We knew we'll be out of pocket for the obstetrician, which was $3,000. That was fine. But when she went into hospital, we had all these extra fees. No one told us about the surgeon assistant fee and anaesthetist. And there was a complication when they did it, so she had to do some imaging, and that was extra. Some extra medications. See, all these things weren't covered, and I think there just needs to be some more clarity, when you're going in for these things.
And yeah, well, you don't want your mind to be on the fine print, do you? You want it to be on the kids.
Exactly, yeah.
So, John, can you be certain that those kind of exclusions weren't buried in those, page 400 of the health insurer's document?
Yeah, that's right. Look, the normal... people, they don't look into these things. You think, you go for the top cover. And it's not cheap either. I think she was paying a couple hundred dollars a month for this top cover. And there's still a lot of out-of-pocket expenses, like the costs of everything. We pay the Medicare levy through our taxes every day. Then we're forced to get private health cover, and you pay that on top. And then if something happens, then you go in, then you're in for further out-of-pocket expenses. Now, I think all these new changes they're making in Medicare is just a, they're cutting more benefits off the list. So you'll be out-of-pocket even further.
And, John, as you say, if you expect them, it's not quite as bad as having been slapped with bills that you didn't realise were coming. Thanks for your call, John. Also in Sydney, Josh. Josh, now you're an anaesthetist. Tell us your reaction.
Look, it's very difficult as a medical specialist when you are trying to do the right thing by a patient.
Oh, I think we're losing you, Josh. Thanks for pulling over. I hope we can get you back on the line. Let's give it another shot. Josh, are you with us? We'll see if we can get back to Josh in a tick. But meanwhile, we'd love to hear if you are booked in for a surgery and see whether your surgeon and your private health insurer have been able to be clear with you about the costs that you might expect, rather than just being slapped with bill after bill after bill later on. So we'll try Josh again. Josh, as an anaesthetist, what's been happening for you in your mind when you see these changes afoot?
Well, look, I'm not sure you've heard what I said before, but in the 17 years I've been working as an anaesthetist, the scheduled fee has not changed. It's definitely not indexed to inflation, and neither is the no-gap rate. So therefore, at some point, the doctors have to put their fees up when the rest of the world is indexing everything to inflation and cost of everything is going up, apart from the rebate from the government.
It's getting a bit hard to hear you, but Josh, I think we got your point that, yes, your other costs go up and the rebate doesn't go up, not indexed to inflation. Richard from Ashgrove in Queensland. Now, Richard, you've got an overseas perspective you'd like to compare ours to. Tell us about that.
Yes. Well, I've been recently a long-time resident of British Columbia in Canada, and they have an MSP, a medical services plan, which is, in fact, an all-inclusive plan. So if you live in British Columbia, you have to pay a small premium every year. That's a rule. Otherwise, you can't live there. And everything is included from your GP right through to all specialists. They don't charge extra. I went through the cancer agency. I had all sorts of different tests and so on. I never paid a cent except from my premium, which is basically a provincial premium.
Wow. That must have been very calming just to know what you could expect.
Well, yes. I mean, you know, it's simple, isn't it? Why make it complicated? Why divide and rule? I mean, the whole thing is divide and rule, isn't it? Everybody has a finger in the pie.
Very good question. Thank you, Richard. This is listening to Life Matters here on Radio National, and we're taking your calls. The number's 1300 225 576 if you're listening in the eastern states, about what kind of clarity you've got about costs for upcoming surgeries within the private system. Our guests are Leanne Wells, CEO of the Consumer Health Forum, and Dr. Stephen Duckett, who's an economist and the Health and Aged Care Program Director at the Grattan Institute. Now, Stephen, you worked in Canada. Is that a economically sustainable system?
Absolutely. So what they said in Canada is that if in most provinces, if the doctor is in Medicare, they bill the Medicare rate, and if they don't want to bill the Medicare rate, they're out of Medicare. That you're either all in or out, and so there are no out-of-pocket costs for anybody, or for 99% of people, that they just don't have out-of-pocket costs. It's called extra billing, and it's just not allowed.
So you can choose to go to a surgeon that's outside the system and pay their fee?
There's almost no surgeons outside the system, except for plastic surgery and things like that. But for everything else, the surgeon bills bills Medicare. You don't actually see the bill. It just goes straight to the provincial plan, that's how it works. Mm.
Stephen, on our Facebook page, the ABC Radio National Facebook page, some of our listeners are expressing concern that these changes to the private system might have flow-on effects for the funding to the public system. Can you shed any light on that?
I don't think so. Basically, we're talking about most of these items that are being changed, the vast majority are actually in-hospital items, and so they only apply for private patients, and the number of private patients in public hospitals is very small. It's really about what happens in private hospitals, and it's not going to change the availability of doctors. I mean, my view is that it won't have much impact on the public system at all, if any.
Mm. Let's take some more calls before we wind up with our guests, Stephen Duckett and Leanne Wells, here on Life Matters today. We've got Fiona from Canberra. Now, Fiona, an arthroscope, that sounds unpleasant to have to go to. What was your experience with it?
No, it hasn't happened yet. It's booked for the 5th of July.
Oh, I see.
And it's a clean out of my ankle, getting rid of some loose matter that's in there with arthritis, and hopefully an infusion to encourage cartilage to grow. But I booked it last week for the 5th of July, and I haven't heard from the surgeon, and I don't expect to. It'll be up to me to ring, and I'm going into the private hospital that he works at. So I have to do an online registration for the hospital, and there's an assistant surgeon, there'll be theatre fees, there'll be goodness knows what else. So heaven help me, I really need it, but I'm expecting to have quite a bit of out-of-pocket.
And Fiona, has there been any communication with your health fund about the costs?
No, I rang them to make sure that I was covered for it, and that given that it was going to be my second hospitalisation within 2 months, that I would only pay the $500 excess once, which was correct, thank goodness. And they're fairly sure that I'm covered for an arthroscope, which is keyhole, basically. A camera goes in and something else goes in to clean out rubbish in your joint. It can be in the knee, it can be in the ankle, and so on.
Well, I wish you all the best for it, Fiona. It sounds like an unpleasant experience, but I really hope that it's better for you in the end. Now, Alex is on the line from Melbourne with a bit of a challenge to our guest Stephen Duckett's comments earlier. Alex, tell us.
Stephen, I've got a couple of challenges. Firstly, I had a friend who recently returned from Canada to Sydney to have back surgery because of the terrible service, the very, very long waiting period he had in Canada. But really, the main reason why I was bringing is because I want to contest you on your suggestion that the surgeon should take full responsibility of not only talking about their fees, but the fees of the anaesthetist, the hospital, the pathology, the radiology. You know, if you were buying a new hot water system, you'd be getting quotes for the whether you're getting a gas or electric system. You then have to go and get quotes from the plumber for installing. You'd have to get quotes from the electrician if it needs a PowerPoint. And those things take time, and it's up to you as the consumer to go and get those quotes. I'm not sure why you think it's up to the surgeon to have to do all that work for the consumer.
You don't have to get about 7 quotes from different practitioners, though, do you? You know, it sounds like when you go for a surgery, there could be 6, 7, 8 different sets of bills coming in. Is it fair for a patient to have to source their own healthcare information?
Hilary, if you were getting a renovation done on your house, you'd be getting quotes from the carpenter, from the electrician, from the plumber, from the tiler.
Oh, yeah, yeah, but that's more of a choice. And also, I'm saying, but for one procedure, not just, you know, if you're getting an air conditioner installed, you might have 2 tradies to deal with. But if you're having one procedure and you've got to talk to the anaesthetist, the radiologist, the pathologist, the surgeon, the assistant surgeon, the hospital fees, the medication fees, is it fair, do you think, that a patient who needs to have an arthroscope and can't walk without it has to do all that work?
So, Hilary, you're saying that the surgeon, without being paid to do all that extra work, would have to then go chase up all those extra quotes in order to provide the whole service.
Oh, no, I'm not commenting on that. No, I'm just wondering where we should sheet that home to, whether it's fair to put it on the patient as well. But I'll let Stephen respond to you, Alex, too. Stephen Duckett, would you like to comment?
First of all, what I said was someone should take responsibility. So it could be the surgeon, it could be the private hospital, it could be the insurer. My own view is it should be the private hospital rather than the surgeon. The private hospital should say to the surgeon, the anaesthetist, if you're going to work in this hospital, these are the fees you're going to charge. And just be quite explicit and take responsibility because I think they have the power. The surgeon could do it if they, you know, there's no particular reason why they, it's an alternative strategy because if we're thinking about it, if you're going to have using this house analogy, you know, you're going to hire the plumber, the electrician and so on. Actually, you normally hire a builder if you're doing lots of those sorts of things and they do all of that work for you.
Ah, so we need a health project manager.
Well, that's in fact what your GP might be, but it also is the surgeon because typically a patient doesn't choose their anaesthetist. Typically, a patient doesn't choose their pathologist, doesn't choose their radiologist. These things all just happen. In the case of pathology and radiology, the private hospital will have a contract. In the case of the anaesthetist, the surgeon will typically choose the anaesthetist. So, you know, this is not a patient choice issue. This is not how the market in medicine works. There's an agent, in this case, the surgeon, and it's quite legitimate for the surgeon to be held to account for saying, I'm recommending anaesthetist X, and that brings with it this cost and these benefits. And for a surgeon, for example, to say, nah, I'm going to recommend someone, I don't care what they charge, that's your problem, is really sort of insulting to the patient, I think.
Alex, thanks for your call. Let's go quickly to John in Melbourne. John, tell us what you are going through trying to book in a surgery.
Oh, good morning. This is about my wife. She's just about to have a biopsy, and it's before July. So this is current experience, not taking into account anything more confounding about the implementation of the new ones. She's due to have a biopsy, and she got the standard informed consent letter, which was very vague. And basically, when we contacted the... in fact, it was so vague it didn't even give an amount. And when we contacted the surgeon's office... we were told that, there are things might go wrong and we don't want to lead you astray by giving you a simple quote and then find out that there are other matters that have to be added in, so we'll let you know later.
So it sounds like, yeah, sometimes there's an attempt to get the information to you, but the complexity of the system mitigates against it. Leanne Wells, before we wind up, I wondered if you have advice for people who are trying to book in surgery. What should they look for and how can they get some more clarity about costs?
Well, I think it's really important for consumers to feel they should have the confidence to ask their surgeon for as close an indication as they can possibly give for all the costs, because it is those cumulative costs that really bite people. And as Stephen said, health is a very different market. You don't choose all the aftercare. You don't choose your aftercare physio necessarily. You certainly don't choose your anaesthetist and all those sort of things. I think the other advice I would give back to the earlier caller's point about, you know, health insurance costs a lot of money, and there's this, I think, misconception in many people's minds that if you take out private health insurance, you're insuring for all your costs when you're actually not. And I think that's where a lot of people get bill shock if an insurer doesn't have a no gap or a known gap arrangement with providers. That's where those cumulative out-of-pocket costs really creep in and give people bill shock. So there's a couple of things. Really, you know, look at the government private health insurance comparator website, because you actually can shop around and you know, in some cases knock almost $1,000 off your premium if you use that comparator site to compare policies and get yourself a better deal if you choose to continue with private health insurance.
And Leanne, in our last seconds, what's the name of that website?
It's www.privatehealth.gov.au, and it's the government's private health insurance comparator website, so it's independent.
A great way to start. Leanne Wells, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Leanne's the CEO of the Consumer Health Forum. Dr. Stephen Duckett, thank you too.
Pleasure, Hilary.
Stephen's an economist and the Health and Aged Care Program Director at the Grattan Institute, former Secretary of the Federal Department of Health.